Welcome to the Kofkin Bond podcast, where we hear from amazing people making a difference. Today, we're thrilled to introduce you to Melissa Yu. Mel's journey embodies resilience, kindness, and unwavering dedication. With a background in clinical psychology and a passion for community engagement, she has emerged as a statewide leader in discussions surrounding lived experiences and suicide prevention in Australia. Her accolades, from nominations for Young Australian of the Year, renowned interviewer, coach of professional speakers, running multiple business ventures, including MCO events, and contributions in social impact, all underscore her profound influence. Yet what truly distinguishes Mel is her ability to leave a mark on all she encounters. Join us as we hear from Mel, someone who is all about making things better for everyone.
Mel, welcome to the Kofkin Bond podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here. I've known you for quite a while now.
You've known me for quite a while.
I have. I've known you longer than you've known me.
My world, yeah. But I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Tony.
No, it was lovely because I think I connected with you on social media, one of your, 44,000 followers on social media, probably about a year before we actually met personally. And we met through an organisation called Cub, which is, and also through a previous podcast guest we've had here as well, Jordan. So it's actually lovely to have you as a podcast guest, especially being a podcast interviewer yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah, so now we spoke in your bio that was read out earlier. There's a whole range of things that have led you to where you are, but you are a renowned interviewer, guest speaker, and also a coach to professionals. And I did see a photo on your website where you are sitting next to a very dear friend of mine, Maha Suka, from VicPol, and her photo is there on your website.
Yeah, so she's did an International Women's Day event together. Actually.
Yeah, so yep. Maha is a superstar of a person, and of course she was the first Islamic woman in the police force to wear hijab, and now as a result of that, there are so many other Islamic women that are actually joining. So, but that International Women's Day, you know, Maha on stage, you on stage, I would assume it is something that you get invited to quite a lot, but this year you actually ran your own event.
You know me so well. I love when an interviewer has actually done some research. But yes, International Women's Day is one of our busiest sort of events where I do get booked out to be a speaker or be on a panel. And then this year I decided that I wanted to use my platform and my stage and bring other women within my community onto those stages and share their stories. There's one thing I think to be, I love being on this side of the mic, by the way, Tony. Like there's one thing to be an interviewer and and asking those questions, and then it's a whole nother experience being the interviewee and then answering questions. So I love being able to play in both, because I think if we stay too much on one side, we don't actually get to learn and grow as much if we're just sharing our lived experience and our story, but then having really wholesome conversations. So this year for International Women's Day, I really wanted to put women that have inspired me on my stages.
And I think you've inspired a lot of women and people in general. And one of the things I actually want to ask about that with International Women's Day, on a post probably a week or two ago, and I can't remember whether it was on Instagram or LinkedIn, they all sort of morph into one nowadays. You are extremely active. But you spoke about, and this will get back to International Women's Day, because we are a country of immigrants or refugees. In my case, I was the first born here. My parents were migrants in 1966, and I was the first born in our family, so I'm a child of migrants. From that perspective, you did a post where you spoke about when you were young, people had said to you, go back to where you come from. And, you know, that's actually very interesting, because it's not something that, when I grew up, it's not something that I necessarily faced, but you knew with your surname and things like that you were a bit different to some. But in International Women's Day, some of the most inspiring women on stage are migrants or children of migrants. So can you give a bit of backstory to that, number one? And secondly, how that has you've still become this amazing person, and the people that you share a stage with, like Maha, are also, you know, amazing migrants or children of migrants as well.
Yeah, I think now as an adult, I can look back, and hindsight's a great thing, where I have this level of self-awareness and discernment to know who I am, and I've made peace with my story. But as most kids growing up in Australia, if you are from an immigrant background, we were born to stand out just based on the colour of our skin. And that was me as a kid growing up in the early 90s. I grew up in a small town called Patterson Lakes. It's towards the Mornington Peninsula. So for those that are listening but don't know where it is, I call it like the Summers Bay or Home and Away of Victoria. And it was beautiful. Lots of palm trees. It was very much keeping up with the Joneses. People lived quite affluently. But for my family who had immigrated from Hong Kong, we moved in to a society where we were the only Chinese family. So very quickly, I just stood out without trying to. And that played its own sort of weight in me growing up. And I never felt like I belonged. I was not Western enough to be fully Western, but I was not Asian enough to be fully accepted by the Asian community. So as an immigrant girl growing up, I really struggled with my identity. And only until sort of processing that now into my adult life, I'm recognizing that we have so much strength and resilience in that story, in that sense of not belonging and finding and paving our own path. And more now, I think that there's women standing up like myself and Maha that are showing that representation is possible, and that there are girls just like you that are standing in these positions of power or leadership and saying, I've been where you've been and I've walked where you've walked, but let me show you that there is another way. So I think there's a really exciting time for people that are coming out. Australia is so beautiful. We're so multicultural and diverse, but it's time that we don't look at it as a sort of a chip on our shoulder and really carrying that flag with pride. So I'm very proud to be Chinese Australian now in my adult life. And the more that I embrace it, the more that other people sort of also celebrate that conviction.
And I think that's a great segue in respect to, I know, I always say I was actually privileged. I've always said that I was actually privileged, Mel, that I grew up in a household where my mother was definitely the boss. She ran the household. The rules were mum's rules. But at the same time, she was a wonderful mentor in respect to teaching my sister and I to be confident. Mm-hmm. You know, if you believe in yourself, you'll actually be confident. She actually grew us up to be confident. But also grew up in a multi-faith background as well. Have a Jewish father and an Irish Catholic mother, you know, so it's, and I think out of that too, my parents had a multitude of friends. A lot of mum's friends at Telecom, where she worked as a telephonist, were gay men. And when mum and dad had their monthly rock and roll parties that they always had, everyone was invited. It didn't matter what nationality, what skin colour you were, who you loved. It all came down to the fact, were you a nice person or not? And if you weren't, mum would let you know and you weren't invited. So I think there was that really inclusiveness in respect to that multicultural community as well. But then some of my best friends are very powerful women, like we spoke about Maria, Maria and Georgie earlier. You met Georgie. These are women, and yourself as an example as well, and even people that we know like Mona and Lillian as well, who are migrants but have become really powerful. Because one great thing about the migrants as well is that we were hard workers. Our parents were hard workers. Yes. Our grandparents were hard workers. And as a result of that, I think we've got a real entrepreneurial flair, which is just inbuilt in us.
Yeah, totally agree. I say that same post that you said about go back to where you came from, that in itself, I feel like people that have received that type of comment here in Australia, we're cut from a different cloth. Like, it's in our blood. It's in our very essence to sort of like keep going, chin up, go through the grit, have the resilience, what is the tenacity, and get through it. So now when people try to knock me down, it just fuels the fire in my belly to keep going.
I couldn't imagine anyone brave enough to do that, Mel. So it's, but let's talk about, I mean, you have, as I said, you've interviewed some renowned people, people like Mark Wahlberg on stage. So people know him as Marky Mark, you know, so it's from my era growing up, you know, but you know, they're very well known people, but you're also a renowned guest speaker, but you also coach professionals as well. So we're going to touch on a few of the different businesses that you work in, But let's start on that first. You're actually a coach to professionals, people like myself, males and females. How did you get into that? Why did you get into that? And tell me how you add value to their lives as well. Awesome. I know, but I want the listeners to know.
Of course. So in a short form content, basically, I with my upbringing, I was fascinated about relationships. I was always fascinated about the mind. So that came from the feeling different at a very young age, going through really early stages of mental health struggles with my parents divorcing at the age of 3. My brother was 5. And that divorce in Chinese communities, mental health is like not talked about. Not only is it not talked about, it's not... it brings shame to the family if it was to sort of arise into the community. So it's very hush-hush. We don't really talk about a lot of that stuff. So when my parents divorced, as a young 3-year-old self, I actually took on a lot of that blame and shame and responsibility because they never explained otherwise why they divorced. And so I really felt like it was my fault. It was me and my brother's fault. So growing up, I just became really fascinated about the mind. And so I studied psychology all the way through into uni. And after psych, I had a relationship, a long-term relationship, and my partner died by suicide in 2014. And I'm skimming through it, but I really wanted to sort of like highlight, there was a fork in the road for me when something that tragic happens and something so traumatic at the age of 23. I was 23 years old when I planned my 23-year-old boyfriend's funeral, and nothing prepares you for that. And as I was studying psychology and going on this path of helping people, life just took a different turn and I really had to learn to look after myself. And I started asking these really deep questions of like, well, why am I here? What is the meaning of life? And why did this really happen to me? And I was suspended as a psychologist. So I was a provisional psychologist, had done my 4 years in honours, and I was suspended for 6 months. It was the best thing that happened to me because I'm such a go-getter. I was like, yep, cool, let's
just get... Why were you suspended?
Because I had just gone through something so significant, the loss, and while I was still working with clients, my supervisors were like, you need to take 6 months off, Mel. Yeah. They were right, because I was so close to the fire. And so working with other people in trauma or working with people that are also going through their own crisis isn't actually very helpful, because I had to learn to sort of fill my cup up first and worry about myself. And they were right, because if I was to do one-on-ones with clients that were going through, say, suicide, something that had exactly just happened to me, I would end up in tears. And then I've got a duty of care. I'm not keeping my clients safe and I'm not safe. So during that 6 months, there was a period where I would just hold Angus's ashes and watch 8 Mile. That was his favorite movie. And I was doing not very much. I was very much in the grief. And over that course of the time, I ended up working in the event space just to sort of pass time. I wasn't an event professional. I was very academic. I was in psychology, but I ended up working in the event space running these tattoo conventions. So the very first event that I was exposed to was a tattoo convention here in Melbourne. And we ended up growing that business and scaling it pretty crazily. But for me, it was trying to, I think, keep him alive. Gus was head to toe covered in tattoos. I'd love if there was a reference image, but he was very much a rock star. He had long, moppy brown hair, big ear stretches and spaces, and just like throat tats, and he was just a rock star. And in hindsight...
He looked like a lead singer of a rock band.
He was... That's how I see him swinging through life as well.
A better looking version of Tommy Lee. I've seen photos.
So I feel like he just had this thirst in life where he skateboarded in and then just skateboarded out, and that was as quick as his impact was, but it impacted me tremendously. But
and you were together for quite some time, weren't you?
6 years. So from 18 to 23.
So you had your first overseas holiday with everything. Your partner with him, didn't you?
We did the first of everything together. We moved in for the first time. We got our jobs for the first time. I feel like that 18-year-old to 23-year-old time as well is such a rites of passage of like exploration from teenage. You just come out of high school, this high school bubble, and then you're like, whoa, I have all this freedom. And then there's just all the chaos that comes with it. There's the drugs, there's the partying, there's the sex, there's the alcohol, there's all that sort of stuff that you kind of go through. And I think we found each other at that real chaotic time, and probably with unresolved trauma from both sides of our upbringing. But yeah, so in my adult life, I ended up doing that, and my career just completely pivoted. And I ended up running an events business. Then I quit that events business and started my own company, which is called MCO Events. But basically was like, okay, I think I can help a lot of people running these events, bringing community together, bringing like-minded people in a room together, which is basically the foundation of what an event is.
What was that aha moment for you, Mel, from actually, you know, help running a tattoo, which I know are very popular?
Yes.
Having one large run on my arm myself, and you've got some quite good artwork as well yourself.
Yeah,
I think at the last tattoo major event, you actually got a new one on your leg. So it's
I'm a tattoo collector now.
You are. So it's but I think though, what was that real aha moment for you where you thought, I could actually do this and do this really well?
I think in the event side of business, it's all planning. It's all prep. When those doors open to public, you have to sort of just be ready for whatever. Like with events, it's like putting out fires. You got to get really good at solutions. You got to get really good at people, understanding things. So my aha moment was being a fly on the wall at my own events and watching people just really have an amazing time, smile on their faces, meeting new people, collecting new artwork, the discovery of sort of an extra part of themselves. That really lit my heart on fire, which was very similar to why I loved psychology. I loved seeing people feel expanded. I love seeing people live in their potential. I love seeing people get really creative or find another piece of the puzzle that just ends up adding more to who they are. And so when that congregation of people came together with the tattoo culture, keeping in mind in 2014, I think tattoos were still kind of taboo and much less a celebration of art, which it is what it is now, but it still had its sort of like, oh, you've got tattoos, you can't get a job, things like that. I'm really excited that society's really shifted, but that was the moment when I was like, I could really build a career out of this. I really love seeing people just come together and celebrate who they are and rejoice in that, considering that I had just, in my own personal story, lost someone that he wanted to make everyone happy, but he couldn't make himself happy. There's so much in that. You need to know who you are to be able to survive this world, because this world is really incredibly challenging. But just to, I've gone a really long roundabout way, Tony, but how I then ended up coaching professionals was COVID. So COVID hit in 2020, and I was running an events business. Everything was in-person events. I went from a successful business to losing every client that we've ever had. Zoom and online stuff did not exist, not at least to the length of what it was. And then COVID hit and I lost everything. And I moved back home at 30 years old and moved back into Patterson Lakes, which I had left from when I was 18. And there was just a whole nother series of personal development that I had to go through. Just came out of a breakup, because again, with COVID, I think a lot of people realized that the relationships they were in probably weren't the best relationships that they were in. So just turned 30, had a breakup with my partner then, moved back home. It was just like, oh shit, what is this? This is a new level of rock bottom. And so I started running virtual events, because I had to pivot some way. And I didn't call it coaching at the time. I just ran these virtual masterminds, bringing back my psychology degree, and was like, let's just get people together, because mental health is so important during this time. And we ran these 4-week programs, 8-week programs, where people jumped online once a week. And we just talked about different things like personal development, mental health, anxiety, how we're coping, self-care strategies. And then at the end of these events, people were like, how else can we work with you? And I'm like, oh my God, I need to start creating a product or a solution for these people to continue to work with me. And so what that looked like was coaching. People were like, how do I get one-on-one time with you? How do I get sessions with you so I can continue to improve what I've built so far with you? And so that's how my coaching business started. We created an extra arm, we created an extra revenue stream, and I started coaching people online. It was a great business model during COVID. It had little to no expenses. It was just all on Zoom and people doing it at the comfort of their own homes. And it was just 1-hour sessions, whether it was weekly, fortnightly, or whatever. And I really personalize these one-on-one sessions to meet them where they were at.
Mel, one of the things I love about that story is there's a lot of coaches out there who might have some lived experience. I don't like coaches that don't have any lived experience. You can't read a book and then... You can't read a book on karate and be a black belt. You actually have to kick things and break things.
Yeah.
You've one got lived experience, which are unfortunate lived experiences, but you've also got study. You've actually also trained and worked as a psychologist.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I think your coaching is a lot more relevant because one of the things I believe you're taught as a psychologist or a psychiatrist is actually to listen. But be able to see where observe and then be able to take a conversation in a certain way. So when you're coaching one-on-one, it's not, okay, I'm going to say this now, they answer, and then you just go to point B and point C. I know in respect to the relationship that we're formed, you wear your heart on your sleeve like I do. You're very personable, but you can actually drive forward to be able to find solutions for people.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that has actually really helped in respect to your development as a coach as well. And even in respect to someone building their own brand identity, if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind touching on that as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think hindsight's a great thing where at the time, I couldn't connect the dots. I didn't know what I was doing. I felt like at that moment where I had moved back home, I really felt like a failure. But then now with a bit more macro of a lens, I've looked back and gone, now it all makes sense. It's almost inevitable that I had a psychology degree, that I went through something as traumatic as my partner dying by suicide, to then events, which is all about community building, to now coaching and building brands, because I really do understand people. I think I take the time to sit and listen and recognize that everyone has a story, and I love stories, and I just want to help people tell compelling stories because they all have it, but we might not necessarily have the skill set to articulate what those stories are, but we all have it. We all have struggles, challenges, fear, failure, all of that, but like, well, how do we weave stories and create a brand which is really just who we are, our identity, our reputation?
Mel, I want you to continue on that, please, but I'll just ask this question because I've just thought of the word rather than trauma in this case, but some of the most successful people in the world are people who have faced adversity in their life and actually pivoted and grown from that. By the loss of your partner to having to move back home, going through then another relationship breakup, and then having to move back home, basically potentially losing your business, you know, which has grown again, thankfully, because people have realised how much connection is important, real connection. But that adversity that you've actually faced and you've been able to pivot every time, I do often say that one of the things that concerns me most is that we have had a generation that sometimes one of the worst things that's actually occurred to them is they've got a flat tyre on their car, and that's the end of the world, whereas, you know, you're faced more than what anyone could ever want to face. Do you think that actually can, from I suppose a psychological perspective here, without you giving medical advice, but do you think that is something that a lot of people who they're just stoic and say, this has happened, I will get over this grief, I'll get over this trauma, I'll get over losing my business, how do I do this again, how do I build this again? Or do you think that's something inbuilt or something that's learnt? Or a bit of both?
Yeah, so I think there's this thing where there's a terminology called post-traumatic growth. And I think the word trauma or your struggles and challenges can happen at any area of your life. It's why some people call it a midlife crisis if they've never had anything or any hardship earlier on. No matter what our life, one thing is guaranteed, and Buddha says it's suffering, right? It's guaranteed. And it doesn't matter where in your life it happens. Some people it happens earlier on, some people it happens later, but inevitably you will get hit with something that will cause grief, that will cause loss, that will cause you to sort of reassess and reevaluate what's important in life. I think that for me, my lived experience, I'm glad it happened earlier because it has allowed me to, when COVID hit, and that was for a lot of people, I totally empathize that was their most significant time. But for me, COVID was almost like a breeze because that shit thing happened to me at 23, and so I was able to overcome it. So my relationship with challenges is very different. I have a huge amount of resilience around that. I don't know. I don't know if you can just teach it, but what happens to you, it's a mindset thing, and I think you can teach it by being around people, networking, mentoring, and adopting new mindsets and learnings to have that growth mindset rather than a fixed mindset.
No, I totally agree with that. And you know, it's they always say that, you know, stress is not necessarily a bad thing. It's how you actually handle the stress. Yes. You know, so if you are going to the gym, you're stressing the muscles, and that's how the muscles grow.
Yeah.
It's the same if your brain, and it's the same in respect to business as well. If everything was just groozy and little,
you wouldn't be able to appreciate it, Tony.
Correct.
You know,
yeah.
I don't think you can, everything's on a spectrum. So if we want those most happiest, purest moments, we have to understand what sadness feels like. If we want to fully be okay with immersing ourselves with love, we have to take the risk that we're going to be completely heartbroken. It's all relative.
Mel, when you say about love, I'll give a shout out to your partner who's embarrassed all of us males with that bunch of roses that he gave you on the weekend. As I looked at that and I thought, yeah, I'm not going to let Boyana see that post.
I have an amazing, amazing partner now. Shout out to Jordan.
Yeah, he's incredible. Yeah, so it's and I mean, I haven't met him. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him as of yet, but he certainly does seem incredible. But that bunch of roses was like, wow. So it's shout out to you, Jordan. Well done. we're going to talk about that power of identity, building individual brands, successful online presence. And one of the things that you did post is that another post was along these lines, not necessarily word for word, but basically it's a case of there's no use having all these followers who might be liking your content if you're not monetizing it in some type of way. And how do you monetize it as well? So from that perspective of building a personal brand, how do you look at building that online presence and something which is in a way of not egotistical, because your posts aren't by any means whatsoever. They are about providing content, good content, and actually growing as an individual as well. So some of the coaching, without giving away all the secrets, of the coaching that you actually do in respect to individuals are building their own brand, even if they work for organisations as well.
So I want to talk about this personal brand because this is the buzzword for 2024. It's really on the rise. Everyone's like, what is it? What's happening? So in real short terms, there's this third wave that's coming in what business or the economy is doing. So once upon a time, when there was kings and queens and emperors and governments, that is how a lot of people made their wealth. And then there was this second wave that came along in the 80s and 70s where corporations really started on the come up. And that's your big companies like Apple, and people were really buying into these company brands. What's happened post-COVID is that we are now adopting the rise of the individual. And the individual, or the person of influence, is really starting to shape what our economy is looking like. And what I mean by that is people are trusting individual people more so than company brands. We've been exposed to for too long by the billboards, by magazines, by these massive flashy campaign ads. We're actually a lot more averted to it now, and we want to buy from people that are just like you and me, that just show up online, because there's a level of authenticity to it. When I talk about marketing or when I show up online, it's who I am as a person. And the reason is why you've really attracted to my brand is because there's this real deep integrity and authenticity to what
authenticity, absolutely there is. Oh, the integrity, without a doubt. But the integrity you don't know about until you've actually met someone.
True.
So you're very consistent, and I now know, having met you, your integrity is as high as it could actually be. But your authenticity in respect to the message that you come across as well is so vitally important.
And I think the word that you really mentioned there as well, it's consistent. I've been showing up online on my platform for 10 plus years. So if anyone wants to like challenge it, it's like, but there's so much evidence and data to show that I've been talking about the same message consistently over a long period of time. And so that right now is why the power of personal brand is so important. Whether you're just looking to expand on your career, you don't have to have a business to elevate your profile and to create influence. And as business owners and entrepreneurs, it's actually essential. For companies, whether the founder wants to be the face of it, they don't have to be, but we do need a face. So you could use someone else's face, someone else that's influential, and have a collaboration with them. But the personal brand part, the personal touch, it's critical right now because we don't want to be sold to. We actually are really wanting things that are humanized, that we feel like we could trust, we could hold, we could call Tony and he gets it. We can talk to Mel and she gets it. That's the power of what I'm trying to teach people now about elevating their personal brand. So when you show up online, we're not talking about your vanity metrics of gaining more followers. I'm talking, how can you make more impact? How can you actually add value to your customer? Because at the end of the day, isn't that what we want to do? We want to create an impact to people. We want to leave people in a better way than we found them. That's why I think showing up online is critical.
So it's about being an expert in your field, not necessarily about a narcissistic behavior from that perspective.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people see influencers as narcissists who have, look how happy I am, look how happy I'm, cameras off, whatever. But knowing you, you are authentic. You are the person you see online is Mel Yu, the person you see.
Yeah.
So if you are a expert, it's about showing that you're actually an expert online. Is that correct? Something like that?
Yeah, I think building a personal brand really highlights if you're a thought leader. And you don't have to necessarily be an expert yet. I think it's okay to document it rather than just like, if you're just starting out and you might not be an expert, you take people on that journey to be like, I'm not an expert yet, so I'm just going to show you what I'm doing in my day-to-day and let's go on this journey together. I think that people...
Joe Rogan's first podcast or... Yeah. Yes, compared to now.
Yeah, 100%. Because you're taking people on a journey and your first version is always going to be shit. Like, it's that shitty first draft that we talk about. This podcast, 100%, is only going to get better because then you have data.
The first one was pretty bad, but it's still up.
But you can always look back on it and go, wow, at least I started. Yeah. And, so I think that there's a lot of value in showing people behind the scenes or coming on this journey with you. And it's not egotistical if you don't make it egotistical. It comes down to, what are your intentions? How do we want to build it? If you feel ick about a certain type of content, I would encourage you not to do it. We've all got different personality traits. This goes back to the psychology and human behavior. If you're not naturally someone that can just get up and like vlog, you know, and put a camera to your face, don't do it. It's not authentic. That very word authenticity, there are so many ways that we can create content. You could blog. You could still do carousel posts. We could do podcasts.
So what's a carousel post?
So you could do like infographics or tiles where you swipe across and it's like the five things.
Yeah.
Podcasting, a great one with just audio if you're not confident with video. You could just write. You could be a great writer. There's many ways that we can still choose to communicate. It doesn't have to be that egotistical kind of like vlogging day-to-day stuff if it's not your natural personality trait.
Yeah. Let's go into just recently, probably a month or maybe a month and a half ago, you ran a retreat, a masterclass retreat.
Yes.
So I think it was for 2 nights, 3 days, away somewhere locally.
Yeah, Mornington Peninsula.
Mornington, yeah. I was thinking
Dalesford. We change locations. We do change locations. We do it in Phillip Island. We do it in Mornington Peninsula. Yeah.
So tell us about the masterclass. I mean, it's something that I've thought about going and attending one myself, more to the fact of actually being that uncomfortable position of being surrounded by a whole bunch of strangers and over the space of a weekend and getting to know people. I just love being in uncomfortable positions. It's something,
you and me both.
Yeah, I thrive in it. Now, in saying that, though, the masterclass, you did the last one in partnership with someone, I think, but predominantly you're the facilitator. Yeah. Okay, so from that perspective, what could somebody expect in being part of your masterclass?
It doesn't even have to be my mastermind or masterclass, Tony. I think the power of going into a mastermind retreat is it's literally called mastermind. So it's a group of minds coming together and creating something that wasn't there before.
Hmm.
And there's a huge benefit of leaving your everyday situation, space, environment, going to a random house of some sort with 10 other strangers, but all have the same values or like-minded goal in mind. That's the power of coming together and meeting people and expanding. And the whole focus and like goal is to do better and to improve and then take what we learn and go back into our day-to-day and apply it. And the greatest growth that I've ever had is joining other people's masterminds, which is then I created my own, but after going to at least 30 odd different mastermind retreats, figuring out what I liked, what I didn't like, what makes my one special or unique, and then creating my own spaces. I think I'm a great facilitator of holding space for people to sort of come there and be able to express, to do the deep dive, to do the personal development journey. We don't often do it. We're so busy in our businesses day to day that we kind of skip the really important stuff, which is like the self-awareness, the self-reflection. So actually dedicating time like a weekend, so much can happen in 72 hours. I see it again and again. We come in as strangers on Friday and we leave with lifelong, like, family members by Sunday, because what happens in those 72 hours is so deep. It's like that proximity, that connection, that vulnerability that happens in a space far transcends sort of like your day-to-day colleague kind of conversations by the water cooler, because it's really, really deep work and it's intentionally deep.
Well, they're challenging too.
It's incredibly challenging. Yeah. There's tears, there's confusion, there's journaling, there's breath work, there's all the stuff that I feel like, yeah, we often skim.
Everything I now do on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it is interesting though that being in a room full of strangers.
Yeah.
I was once asked, how do you go into a room full of strangers and just go up and introduce yourself to someone? Isn't that uncomfortable? I said, I actually find it more uncomfortable standing in a corner by myself and not talking to anyone.
I love that. And also practice.
Yeah.
Right?
Just go up and say, hi, I'm Tony.
Yeah.
It's and I've, you know, and now do it in a place and a time that, or doing it in a way that's not intruding, you know, on an in-depth conversation, as an example. So take Lillian as an example, a friend of both of ours. When I first met her, I was told by Holly that actually I should meet Lillian because she could help you on this thing. I knew who she was, but every time I went to say hello to her, she was always talking to a group of people. She's very popular. But I got that one second where I saw she's free, and I just went straight up and introduced myself from there. It's easy to do or easy not to do, as our friend Peter Turin often says, you know. Yes. So it's, but I just found that more comfortable than sitting in a corner by myself. And also too, that from the mastermind, people are willing to share. People are willing to help other people.
Yep.
It's not just somebody sitting there wanting to take notes and take. There are people there that actually do want to share and help as well.
I agree. I think that the more that I'm in the business world and learning, I find that people that are doing better than you are always willing to send the ladder back down.
Mm.
There aren't people that are really selfish with who they know or what they know. If they are doing relatively well, we understand it. And the most successful people I know are incredibly generous.
Yeah. And you often see that as well, is the most successful people are the people that are always willing to give and help other people.
Agreed.
I have had people say, I can't do it just now, but yes, I will do that, you know, if I've reached out. And I think both you and I, we're very well connected, but we're very well connected because we also connect people too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about take. And
yes.
I think that's something that's really important. And I see you do it, and you do it really, you know, extremely well.
Yeah, Jordan also does that really well.
He does. Like, yeah, so, well, Jordan,
us together,
well, Jordan was the one who insisted that the two of us actually meet.
He's actually quite aggressive in his network.
He is.
But I love it.
And as a result, you know, you're sitting here now and we are going to be working together in the future as well, which is wonderful. There was something that I, you know, there's a whole thing here based on it, but become the best you can be. I do love that quote. And let's end on that quote. So, first of all, what do you see in respect to helping people become the best they can be? Because sometimes they just need that little nudge and how you actually do that. And I think that's something that you are very good at getting people to talk about as well. So what is that to you? And then what is it for you personally about being the best version of yourself? So what the best Melissa you version of yourself?
I will start with the end in mind for that, because I think about the end always. I literally think about what my life will be like when I'm dead. And it sounds morbid, but it's because I was faced with mortality from such a young age. I looked death in the face at 23 and asked those deep questions. And it's actually helped me live such a meaningful, purposeful life. And I just want to go out swinging. And I want people to remember me when I die to be like, she gave it a good hard crack. Like, you know, there was nothing left in the tank. She just came out swinging and she did it. And that's kind of what drives me every single day, which is why I want to be the best that I can be. Because when I look death in the face, when it's my time, I want to be like, there was no untapped potential. She did everything that she could. She
didn't leave anything on the table. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what drives me. And so when that is my innate motivation, it's how I can then sort of be able to be a mirror for a lot of people. I don't push people to what I just help them uncover what they want to see or what they already see. I also have let go of a long time to make everyone live out their potential, because I realize that's also not my weight to carry. I used to be like that though, like, but there's so much potential in you. I just want to meet people where they're at and also help open their mind or see things another way as well, and just be that mirror and be that reflection. Because when I look in the mirror every single night, I go to sleep very well at night, knowing that like my intentions are pure, I'm a good person, and I've given it a good hard crack.
Yeah, you do live every day. As they say, take the day by the horns. Basically, it's something that you do every single day. Mel, in closing, I just want to thank you for coming in and being a guest. I'm looking forward to working with the next 50 years with you. You know, so you're only in your 30s. I'm 55 this year, so I've got 50 years to go.
We've got some good times together.
Yeah, we have. We've got a lot of good business journey together too. Is it okay if we put your socials on this link for all of our clients to reach out as well?
Please do.
That's wonderful. So thank you so much for being our guest today.
The Kaufman Bond Podcast is a product from Kaufman Bond & Co., which we are an authorized representative of Cairn Financial. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of the Kaufman Bond Podcast are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decision, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from the podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Kaufman Bond website, or you can find resources on the ASIC website and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Kaufman Bond & Co. and the hosts of the Kaufman Bond podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of the country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.